Thank you for your patience. We're calling to order now the Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee, and we will start with a report on the expenditure of the stimulus funds, and I'd call Diane Wells to the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to update you on the federal programs for distributing stimulus funding for broadband. My name is Diane Wells, and I am the manager of the Telecommunications Division at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ARRA, $7.2 billion has been made available for broadband. That money is being distributed by two federal agencies, the Rural Utilities Service, or RUS, of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA, of the U.S. Department of Commerce. The RUS was allocated $2.5 billion to fund infrastructure projects. The NTIA was allocated $4.7 billion, with roughly $350 million for broadband mapping and $4 billion for projects involving the deployment of infrastructure, public computing centers, and sustainable broadband adoption. With regard to broadband mapping, the NTIA is charged with developing a national broadband map by February of 2011. To accomplish this, NTIA had each state or a state's designated entity submit a proposal to map the broadband within a state and to also apply for an optional broadband mapping project. In late December 2009, Connected Nation, Minnesota's designated entity, was awarded a grant of $1.7 million, with $1.2 million for mapping broadband over the next 2 years, and $500,000 for a five-year mapping planning project, which will help to identify barriers to broadband adoption in Minnesota. With regard to the rest of the funding being distributed by RUS and NTIA, they have jointly taken the approach of issuing the money in two rounds, and I'll explain the process being used on the basis of round one and round two. And it should be
Madam
noted.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Do you have hard copies of this?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, no, but I can send it electronically to Mr. Seufert.
That would be helpful.
Okay, thank you.
It should be noted that under both round one and round two, applications go directly to the federal agencies, and the RUS process is handled entirely within RUS. The NTIA process did use outside evaluators as a part of round one, and there was also an option for states to make a recommendation to the NTIA. Under round one, the Notice of Funds Availability, or NOFA, was issued on July 1, 2009. Applicants could submit one application to both the RUS and the NTIA for the same project, with the agencies coordinating their decisions. The application window was from July 14th to August 14th, but due to problems with the electronic submission process, any applicant that had their application in process on August 14th had about an additional couple of weeks to make sure everything went through. In round one, the RUS announced that it would make grant and loan awards totaling $2.4 billion. The RUS awards in round one are generally 100% grants for projects in remote areas and 50% grant, 50% loan in non-remote rural areas. The round one NTI program was generally 80% grants with a 20% match required. NTI indicated it would award a total of $1.4 billion in round one, with $1.2 billion for infrastructure, $50 million for public computing centers, and $150 million for sustainable broadband adoption projects. The first awards under round one were made on December 17, 2009. In that first announcement, the University of Minnesota was awarded $2.9 million for a project to bring computers and training into four designated poverty zones in Minneapolis and St. Paul. There have been six subsequent announcements of projects funded by NTIA and RUS in round one, but no other Minnesota projects awarded. Of the approximately $3.8 billion that the federal agencies indicated they would award in round one, about 20% of that money appears to have been awarded to date. NTIA and RUS have both indicated they hope to complete the round one awards by early March. And based on a review of the public website at www.broadbandusa.gov, it looks like 49 projects affecting Minnesota, meaning that the project is entirely within Minnesota, or Minnesota is one of 50 states covered by the project. There are 49 applications still in play or awaiting a decision in round one that affect Minnesota. For round two, the notice of funds availability was issued on January 15th, and that application window is February 16th through March 15th. This time around, the RUS and NTIA have separate applications, and you cannot submit the same project to both federal agencies. Now, if you're getting the sense from these round two dates that someone that applied in round one may only find out the result of their application with very little time to submit a round two application, that does appear to be the case. So it could be a difficult situation for some of the applicants that are still waiting to hear.
So, Ms. Wells, do they need to submit a second, or is it even advisable to submit a second RFP if they're not sure if they got an award in round one?
Madam Chair, the federal agencies have indicated they're going to try to make all of the awards by the first week of March so that there would still be time. Also, what's been happening is they haven't been giving the applicants that have been rejected much information as to why. They've been holding a series of workshops and giving tips to potential applicants, but they are advising if you had an application in round one and you haven't heard anything yet, you should be preparing to file in round two. RUS is indicating it will award $2.2 billion in round two, and in this second round, the RUS focus will be on last mile projects, and the base award will be 75% grant and 25% loan. In round two, the NTIA will issue $2.6 billion with $2.35 billion earmarked for infrastructure projects with middle mile projects that connect community anchor institutions as the focus. $150 million has been allocated for public computer center projects and $100 million for sustainable broadband adoption projects. And just as an aside, a sustainable broadband adoption project would be a project that would teach people how to use a computer so that they would in turn then want to subscribe to broadband service at their home. In round two for the NTIA process, the states will again have the opportunity to make recommendations on the specific applications or areas of the state that the NTIA should give priority in selecting projects. But like round one, the state recommendation is one of only several factors that the NTIA will consider in making its decision. The estimated date for the NTIA and RUS to begin announcing the round two awards is June of 2010, and all funds have to be awarded by September 30th of 2010. And I know all these numbers have been confusing, but to summarize it in simple terms, the federal agencies are using two rounds of funding to award the broadband stimulus money. The round one announcements of awards are still in process, and there's a lot of money still to be awarded, and several projects affecting Minnesota still in play. The round two application window is February 16th to March 15th, and there will be another significant amount of money that can be applied for. Because the process is being conducted at the federal level, the competition for the money is national. And the only guarantee written into the ARRA is that the NTIA is to try to award at least one project per state.
So. Okay. Just for members' clarification, these funds are being distributed at the federal level. They're not funds that are coming to the state for the state to distribute. However, there is a provision that the state can make recommendations in regards to priorities from the applications from the state. And early on in the process, the House Chair and I wrote a letter to the governor asking that we would be allowed to view the proposals and to help prioritize the recommendations. But we were denied that, stating that it was proprietary information and that we did not have a right to take a look at this. So we don't know the priority of the proposals that went forward. And I'm wondering, Ms. Wells, if you can let us know if the university proposal that was chosen was a top priority of the state.
Madam Chair, We had a lot of discussion internally about releasing the results, and just to give a little more background, we liken the process to the state awarding a contract where all of the information is reviewed and then it's not released until the contract is actually awarded. So we will make that letter of recommendation on the round one projects available after the round one completes at the federal level. For round two, the NTIA has already indicated that they will post the letters from the states when the states file with the NTIA.
Can you tell us what the proposal from the University of Minnesota was and what they will be doing? And the amount of the award?
The University of Minnesota proposal, and they have a model that they used within the university for teaching people how to use computers and making computers available. And so they are going to adapt it and roll it out as a demonstration model and work with 11 community computer labs serving North and South Minneapolis and the Frogtown area of St. Paul. And so there are existing computer labs in 10 of the locations. In the 11th location, they'll be creating a computer lab in public housing, and they'll be providing additional computer stations in the existing labs. And then they're going to provide staff to train people how to use computers, and the training material will be designed in a culturally, linguistically, and technologically appropriate manner. So they're trying to reach out to maybe non-native English-speaking peoples to teach them how to use the computers. So that'll create jobs through the trainers, and then it'll also help people apply for jobs on the computers that are in the computing centers. And the dollar amount of the grant was $2.9 million, and there was the 20% match was provided through funding that the University of Minnesota came up with.
Okay, questions? Senator Koch?
I understand. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wells, there was some, if we've already spoken about this, I'm very sorry, but it's the mapping dollars I believe it was $1.7 million was received. No, we did provide funding for mapping, and that was completed. And so I'm just kind of interested in what will those funds be used? We've got a map, and there's continued mapping, but what does that continued mapping entail? Could you speak to that a little bit?
Madam Chair, Senator
Ms. Wells.
In the 2008 session, the legislature appropriated $175,000, I believe, out of our TAM fund to fund a mapping project and directed the Department of Commerce to contract with a nonprofit agency. So we went through the RFP process. There were three applicants. We selected the best applicant, which was Connected Nation, and they compiled maps under the criteria that were outlined in that legislation, and it was county-level speed maps. You can input on the website your address, and they'll tell you what providers are available. Under the federal legislation, the criteria are quite a bit different. And I was just talking to one of the providers beforehand, and they've gotten the data request from Connected Nation, and there is going to be a substantial amount of work they have to do to provide different data. And then broadband is continuously being deployed in the state, and so it's going to be updating that map, because that map was finished June 30th, and it hasn't been updated since because the funding was out. And so now with this new data, the map will be updated, and it'll be there'll be better data available, and it'll be more able to be manipulated.
Ms. Koch? Senator Koch.
That's right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Wells. So what kind of better information for the consumer? And what that might look like? Are we talking pricing? Are we talking?
Madam Chair, Senator Koch, yeah. It'll be the type of technology used, the speeds available, and I believe pricing is in there. So you can enter your address, and you can see who's all providing service to you, and then the different speed tiers that are available. And then I believe pricing is in there. The other piece, the $500,000 piece of the $1.7 million, is a mapping planning project, and that's going to be looking at the different areas of the state and why broadband isn't being adopted, and you know what the barriers are, and then ideas for overcoming the barriers.
Thank you.
Along those same lines, has that map been useful? Have providers used it in terms of identifying areas where they will extend broadband? Or is there the option to use that $1.7 million instead of further mapping to bring broadband out into rural Minnesota?
Madam Chair, the money is being used to help the NTIA create their map, and since they have their criteria that need to be met, that's what the money is to be used for, so that they can compare all 50 states and look at availability on a common basis across the entire country. The data was used by applicants in round one to show that, you know, that area was unserved or underserved. So it was useful from that point of view. We've referred a lot of people, consumers calling into the department to the website, because at Commerce we only regulate the telephone companies, you know, and we have a general idea of if they're providing broadband in an area, but we don't know what the wireless providers might be or where the cable companies are providing broadband. So we send them to that tool to help them determine what providers would be available in their area. I'm not sure. I suspect the wireless providers, the WISPs, might be using it to determine what might be a market entry opportunity for them. I'm not so sure. The incumbent telephone companies, you know, have their service territory, so they know where they serve. Whether the competitors are looking at that, I'm not sure. It is a tool they could be.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that there's different information needed by the feds. It just seems to me that $1.7 million is a lot of money, not in maybe light of the entire stimulus bill. That's just a drop in the bucket. But I would like to see it evolve into something a little more. So now we're mapping. Now we know where we have holes, and I understand that's also an ongoing process. But another 1.7 to sort of continue to input information and try to define ways, I think that the telcos and broadband providers could help us with that. I'm not sure that we need an additional 1.7. I'd rather see it being deployed out into the field for plant, but that's just my two cents on that.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still a little, I guess, unsettled or a little confused about the response that you received to your request to participate somehow in the process by which these competitive grants were proposals were submitted for the grants. Can you better explain what you requested, or can we hear from the agency? It doesn't seem to me like we would be getting into any proprietary issues if we were, you know, consulting and communicating with leadership in our legislature around overarching priorities that might set the direction. And I'm wondering what we think about how we made out in comparison to other states with the lack of that kind of involvement.
There was some legislative involvement in all other areas of the stimulus funds, and so we felt that it was important for us to have the similar input on the broadband areas. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote a letter asking that the legislature would have the chance to comment on the prioritization of the projects. But we were informed that the information could not be released to us because it was proprietary. But maybe you could expand on that, Ms. Wells.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, what the process was the NTIA gave the state, through the governor's office, the opportunity to comment on the applications, but they didn't give us any information other than the name of the applicant, the dollar amount requested, the title of the project, the contact name, telephone number, and a very short summary of the project. Based on that information, you couldn't evaluate the projects. So the evaluation process worked by contacting the applicants and asking them to submit their full application, which contained a significant amount of proprietary information and deemed that way through the NTIA process, because they, to date, still have not, they haven't released a lot of the information. It's very little of what they've released. So we had files and files coming in, megabytes of information that the evaluation team went through, but it is proprietary. But without going through all of that information, you really couldn't evaluate projects and compare one to another to determine, you know, which one would rank higher. The other point to the process is there were 8 factors listed, and the 8th factor was the state recommendation, and it's the same in round 2. So whether the state recommendation is even going to be given that much weight, it's hard to say. And frankly, it was, you know, for the evaluation team, it was hours and hours and hours of work to do a good job. So to expand that to more and more people, it was just with the proprietary issues, the time involved, the inability to determine whether what the state recommended would have any meaning or not, it was.
Ms. Wells, isn't it true, though, that the federal government didn't prohibit legislators from being involved, and that, in fact, Minnesota was the only state that kept that information private and didn't involve the legislature?
Madam Chair, Minnesota, as far as I know, was the only state that did not release the letter of its recommendations, but most of the other states, from what I'm aware of, set up evaluation teams, and in, I believe, Washington State, they had 5 independent consultants from the private sector that did their evaluation. I don't believe there were legislators, for example, on that evaluation team. So if I would have to go back and look at all of the states, but
who was on the evaluation team for the state of Minnesota?
Our attorneys have advised that that's also a piece of the process that we can't divulge until the end of the round 1 funding process. What we did was liken it to the RFP process, where all, even though it's a one-off process, you don't release the names of the evaluation team members until the contract is awarded. So when the money is all awarded, then that information becomes public.
Senator Dibble.
I'm trying to, I just don't think the correlation really holds up. And this is a competitive grant trying to fulfill state policies and priorities. It's a federal, I mean, it just does not. In every other area, you know, whether it's the energy sector and transportation, I mean, it's been fully discussed and fully vetted, even when private interests and entities are involved. And to remove even to this level, and you know, legislators can be, you know, can hold up their right hand and swear not to divulge proprietary information. It's flawed to try to do these sorts of things. Begs more scrutiny and begs a level of distrust, you know. And frankly, there are some questions about whether or not this state executive administration is really trying to take full advantage of the opportunities that are coming to us through the ARRA stimulus effort. And this just continues to open up that question for more scrutiny. I just don't think the parallel holds up. This is public money. These are federal dollars. Even if you're not opening it up for the whole world to see, you know, to build the level of, you know, we're going to have a conversation about our policies and priorities, trying to establish a partnership with the private sector and the executive on where we're going with broadband. So I don't know why we wouldn't try to start building that relationship through this opportunity.
Senator Jungpar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Wells, I'm kind of thinking through that, and I tend to agree with Senator Dibble in the way this is done, and but I accept that I probably wouldn't agree that the administration has been trying to do things, but I know some of the hurdles that have been put up on some of these different processes. But it does occur to me that we can be basically take an oath as legislators and do that. But is then assuming that this process is secret like other contracts, is there also the same way to challenge the outcome like you can in other contracts, like a MnDOT RFP award?
Ms. Wells.
Madam Chair, Senator Youngbauer, we don't actually award the money, so I guess if there was going to be a challenge as to who got the money, that would go to the NTIA.
Well, it just doesn't seem like if the process is, then why would the process be closed if we don't actually do any awards based on RFPs? Then it really starts looking strange. If there's nothing really awarded by us, and yet we can't be involved. Am I missing something here, Madam Chair?
No, my question, though, Ms. Wells, is the administration going to use the same process and the same evaluation team for round two?
Madam Chair, I have posed that question to the governor's office and am waiting on a final decision.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, I got a couple questions. Are you disappointed with the round one proposal that's been awarded?
You know, Senator Rosen, if I knew what was in round one, I could make a choice. But since all I know is the outcome of the first choice in round one, I have no way to evaluate it.
Madam Chair, because I think we all had the opportunity to send in letters of proposals that we knew were out there to endorse a specific proposal. If it came to your attention, it was our opportunity to send a letter to the executive branch. So this proposal probably would not have been my choice, and it was not my choice, but I would, too, like to endorse proposals in round two, and I plan on doing that.
It would be nice to know what those proposals are so we could choose what to endorse. Ms. Wells.
Madam Chair, the proposals are all available on the public website, www.broadbandusa.gov, for round one. So you can search for projects in Minnesota and see what they are. It's just very summary information, a very short description. As the applications are filed, they will be posted under round two on that same website. And in fact, in the applicants have been asking for endorsements, and we were very careful on the evaluation team. Anyone on the evaluation team could not have been endorsing or with an agency that endorsed anything ahead of time. We try to be very careful on being neutral in looking at the projects and not having a bias going in or having done any endorsement. And that's kind of why it's at Commerce, because.
On the other hand, though, when we were dealing with the energy funds, there were a number of projects that came before us, and the legislature, in effect, decided what were those that were of priority that should go into a bill that should be funded. So it can work both ways. Senator.
Madam Chair, was the methodology included in the original proposal?
Madam Chair, Senator Vandeveer, what the governor's office received from the NTIA was the opportunity to comment, and this is actually, it said all states will be provided an opportunity to make recommendations concerning the allocation of funds for qualifying projects in or affecting the individual states during step two of the BTOP application process, regardless of their participation in the state broadband data and development grant program. During step two of the BTOP application process, the governor's office of each state will receive a list of the applications under consideration. States may provide a list and prioritization of recommended projects along with an explanation of why the selected proposals meet the greatest needs of the states. And we had 20 calendar days from the date of notification. So it was kind of wide open as to how each state wanted to handle it, but it was run from the NTIA through the governor's office.
Any further comments or questions? Okay, thank you, Ms. Wells.
Thank you.
Next, we have a bill, Senate File 2254, which is my bill, and I'm going to ask Senator Dahl to take over the chair.
Senator Prentice-Hole, I understand you have an author's amendment, too?
Yes, I would like to start with the author's amendment, and that it's an oral amendment to delete subdivision 4.
And on that author's amendment, then, is there any discussion from members or questions? And for the record, a quorum is present at this time. It would eliminate, you want to remove subdivision 4, so everything from 1.21 on is removed.
Mr. Chair.
Again, members, any questions or comments? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Prentice-Hole, is this, is there a reason for this?
Senator Prentice-Hole.
Senator Rosen, it is an author's amendment. I'm just asking for this to be removed at this time, but it's basically, it's very cumbersome to, the administration already has the right to create a task force, and people can be talking to them and asking them to create this task force. And so it's not necessarily necessary to put this suggestion into legislation.
All right, on Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's the Betzel Amendment, you know, where he always says, where you say report to the chairs of the legislative committees. He always likes to put in the minority. He said, I can't remember the exact wordage, but he always says something about addressing the
minority members.
Maybe we should, Senator Olsen, maybe we can address that later on after we do the author's amendment and add that in here. So on the author's amendment to remove subdivision 4, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Chairs, that's in subdivision 3. That's a good idea.
All right. Senator Olsen, do you want to talk about that at this point further now, or?
If Senator Youngbauer's memory is better than mine, he'll remember it. He always puts it in.
Okay, I'll come say hi.
The chairs and the minority lead.
Ranking minority members on the committees. Of,
I think Mr. Fuller will have that language, and we can add that at some point here. So at this point, Senator Prentice-Hole, would you like to go through the bill, or would you like to have Mr. King testify at this time?
Actually, may I add it as a part of my author's amendment and just put after legislative committees, after chairs, add and ranking minority members.
All right. So as amendment to that author's amendment, we will add on line 1.19, after chairs, we'd include the language and ranking minority members. All in favor of that amendment to the amendment? Say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill before you. It is the result of countless hours of work by the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force members over a 2-year period. The Broadband Task Force was created as a result of a bill that this committee passed in 2008. And that same year, we required the mapping of existing broadband networks in our state. The work of the task force and the results of the broadband mapping initiative have contributed to the recommendations that are coming to you in this bill. The bill sets aggressive goals to deploy broadband throughout the state and to give access to all of Minnesotans by 2015, with minimum download speeds of 10 to 20 megabits per second and minimum upload speeds of 5 to 10 megabits per second. The bill also states that Minnesota should be in the top 5 states in the country for broadband access and the top 15 globally. The Department of Commerce will monitor the implementation of these goals and provide annual progress reports. I want to thank the task force for their hard work over the past 2 years. The participants have sacrificed considerable amounts of time and money to put together a blueprint for getting universal broadband access in Minnesota. The process for making these recommendations was based on consensus building. While more hard work remains with the implementation, adopting these goals into law will provide a needed yardstick for measuring our progress. And I'd also like to thank the chair of the task force, Rick King, for his hard work and leadership on the task force and his willingness to respond to requests to appear at events throughout the state to explain the purpose and the parameters of the recommended broadband goals. At this point, we'll discuss the work and recommendations of the task force, and I'd like to begin with Rick King.
Mr. King, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you again. For the record, if you'd introduce yourself, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the welcome back. It's good to be before the committee again. My name is Rick King. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Thomson Reuters in Eagan by day, and had the honor of chairing this task force in the other part of the day and night. So I'm here to talk to you a little bit about Senate File 2254 and also to talk to you a little bit about what went on with the task force. Joining me today will be Commissioner Glenn Wilson of the Department of Commerce, and he'll give a couple of points. We also have Craig Taylor, who is a member of the task force and a management person at Health Partners. He'll be speaking a little bit about the healthcare implications. And finally, Joanne Johnson, who's in the leadership of Frontier Communications, who also a task force member, will be speaking to you. Minnesota is known throughout the country for our world-class knowledge businesses, universities, innovative entrepreneurs, the knowledge manufacturers of the 21st century economy. Now our state needs the transportation system to take Minnesota's knowledge goods to the market. In the last century, Minnesota built an economy based on natural resources and a transportation infrastructure that moved products to market by road, rail, and water. Today, we're moving ideas and services. We need a broadband transportation infrastructure that moves this knowledge to the market at world-class levels in order to grow our state's economy. The Minnesota legislature and governor recognized the important role that broadband technology plays as the transportation highway of the new economy. That is why he commissioned the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force and charged us with developing actionable recommendations to make Minnesota a broadband leader. The task force was made up of 23 members from a variety of vocations and locations. We met 18 times over 15 months between July 2008 and November of 2009. There were leaders of telecoms, businesses, communities, and so forth, and the attendance was great. We seldom had substitutes and rarely had somebody missing. We held 3 meetings in Greater Minnesota to make sure we heard, had our meetings open and voices heard out in the greater parts of Minnesota. We also had a tremendous website that provided information. Many people actually transcribed the meetings, videotaped the meetings. There was incredible interest among attendees at the meetings and people looking at the website. We got great support from your committee, your committee's staff, that of the House and the House staff. Department of Commerce staffed this with Ms. Wells, who you just heard from. Also, Deed was there and OET, And I really want to recognize Diane Wells, Ms. Diane Wells, Department of Commerce, for her work. The task force always held open meetings. We had subcommittee groups. We took complete minutes and posted them. It was, I think, a very open and collaborative effort. And as Senator Pretner Solon said, I think the most interesting outcome was that we never voted on anything. We always reached a consensus on all of the goals that are written in the report. And I presume you all have a copy of the spiral report when we presented that in November. In your packets, there's the executive summary is printed. And for those that I think the 16 pages is a little bit too much, there's a two-pager that summarizes the summary. So take it at whatever level of information flow works for you. Now, why is this so important? Reaching the pinnacle of broadband leadership would be a means to an even greater end. We'd be equipping Minnesota businesses and individuals to take advantage of the full range of economic development and quality of life opportunities afforded by the Internet today. Just consider the opportunities. Expansion of broadband is one of the most effective public investments for economic growth. For every dollar invested, the economy sees a tenfold return. And the data behind this was in the report and all the footnotes and where it came from and so forth. Secondly, nationwide, investments in broadband infrastructure are said to create or retain 1 million to 2.5 million jobs in the coming years. Third, with nearly 80% of Minnesota's economy today wrapped into the knowledge and service industries, high-speed broadband has the potential to unlock enormous economic growth for the state. Finally, broadband also offers new healthcare and education opportunities through telemedicine, distance learning, online education, and other opportunities that otherwise would be out of the reach for many greater Minnesota residents. And in fact, in addition to that, it might actually be a more efficient way to deliver some of these traditional services. Minnesota must act swiftly if we are to achieve the full economic advantage of the broadband investments. Broadband investment is already underway, and as you heard previously, with more than $7 billion for broadband expansion and upgrades included in that 2009 stimulus. At the same time, the Federal Communications Commission Broadband Task Force is exploring many of the same questions studied by the Minnesota Task Force. And in fact, their plan was due to be presented this month and now will be presented a month later, so it'll be in mid-March. And this could ignite even more national attention to the issue. Working together, we stand a better chance to grab whatever federal dollars become available. That's why it's important that Minnesota move to implement the task force recommendations in order to fully take advantage of the opportunity to make Minnesota a national technology, economic development, and quality of life leader for the 21st century. So the recommendations before you in the bill focus on how we would achieve the goals of universal high-speed broadband access as soon as possible, but no later than 2015. Also, that would specifically be achieving speeds of minimum 10 megabits down and 5 up. The state would then develop policies that would facilitate private and public partnership and encourage incentives for business individuals and Internet providers. Many of those things would be picked up by the ongoing council that has been spoken of that could be formed by the Department of Commerce and marched forward. Our greatest measure of success might not just be the relative speeds, but rather how we would want to rank ourselves in the country and in the world. Our recommendations set forth that we would want to be in the top 5 states for speed, top 5 states for access, and in the top, that's in the United States, and in the top 15 for broadband access globally. Should be noted today that in the area of speed and access, where we are today, different surveys would have it in different places, but we're roughly 24th in the United States today. Important to helping us achieve these goals is the notion that there would be an ongoing advisory group that would help focus interest on this and bring to a head what needs to be done by 2015 so we could meet the goals. Two things that we felt, particularly in the report, that the group that was assembled was not as fit to respond to, but are very important, are the areas of financing, creative financing, ways to create public and private partnerships, and also internet security. Those two areas, as we form any type of ongoing council, be it from the administration or in legislation, would need to be addressed either by staff in that council or by the makeup of the council itself. I think those are two areas that that we saw as not covered by our remit. You'll be interested to know that as we released our report in November, it created a lot of interest in the state, regionally, and also nationally. There were actually 140 press pickups of the release of the report, and they ranged across the country. New York Times, Associated Press, LA Times actually had a reporter call, Washington Post, Boston Globe. There were requests for interviews, TV, radio, a lot of print media, and a lot of blog activity related to the report. And the report has been received very favorably, and I commend the task force itself for the thoughtful and balanced and consensus method that got us to the end. I think that you're going to see increasing interest in this as this national set of policies and goals come rolling out from the FCC. It will ignite a whole additional round of interest because they'll go back to the states that are viewed as leaders who have put plans together for themselves, and I believe that we can count Minnesota as one of those. We're in a position to take action now. We've got something we can do. We can set the vision for the state. We can set the goals for the state. And if you have the wisdom to do before by forming the task force, we're asking that you look at this bill and pass this bill so that we can get on with advising, monitoring, and advocating for the implementation of the task force goals. Thanks for the chance to talk to you. I'll certainly be able to respond to questions, but I'd like to call Commissioner Wilson forward, if that's permissible, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. King. Welcome Mr. Wilson, Commissioner Wilson, to the table.
Mr. Chair, while the commissioner's coming up here, I'm wondering if I could just comment that we also received a call today from the National Conference of State Legislators, who's interested in our legislation and sees it as a leadership position that we're taking on the setting of broadband goals.
Senator Prater-Solon, are we the only state then that's doing this right now?
I believe we're the first, anyways.
Okay, excellent. That's good to know. Commissioner Wilson, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, to Chairman Prater-Solon, Senator, members of the committee. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I want to really commend the committee and the chair for the recognition of the importance to the state, to business, the health community, the security community, and the individuals throughout the state as to the importance of bringing high-speed broadband to a broader audience, no matter where they reside in the state. So, again, I commend the committee and the chair for that. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the great job that the chair of this committee, to my left, Rick King. I've had the opportunity as an old man to be on a lot of different study groups and business groups throughout my career. None have been chaired in a better fashion. None brought consensus more dramatically to a committee that was broad-based, both geographically and from all aspects of our communities. Mr. King did an absolutely outstanding job, as well as the members of the task force. These meetings were held throughout the state, was already mentioned. Many of them had to come in the night before to wherever the meetings were, and they were day-long meetings. They were well attended. The notes were taken. We had outstanding testifiers. So, again, almost all of that is to be credited to Chairman King for his work on this committee. Senate File 2254, in its first two subdivisions, adopted the Broadband Speed Task Force goals and the State Broadband Leadership goals that were the task force report. The Department of Commerce and the Employment and Economic Development, as well as the Office of Enterprise Technology, support the goals that are outlined in this report and will continue to work for their adoption. Subdivision 3 of the bill requires that the Commerce Department in report the achievement report the achievements and goals throughout the annual report to the legislature. And between the work of the Commerce and the Department are working with Connected Nations to map the broadband in Minnesota and the information published by the various sources of national and international broadband speeds and access. We'll provide this on an annual basis, and it should be something that we can achieve. I had a comment on Subdivision 4, but I'll pass on that, Madam Chair. And as mentioned, though, in the comments, I've provided the joint hearing in November that some of you may recall when the Broadband Task Force report was submitted. That report was a beginning, and there is still much to be done, as outlined in this report. We pledge that we will then help to do the work and continue the work that was outlined in this report to the benefit of all Minnesotans, as I mentioned earlier. The health community, the securities community, citizens and businesses throughout the state. Okay. That concludes my report. Any questions?
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah, I do have. You said that you see that this is an achievable goal, the 2015. You know, you see it as an easily achievable goal, or is it going to be something that we're going to have to really stretch ourselves to meet? I know the task force had a consensus, but I mean, from your view, and now we've had some time between the report being released and now talking around to the community, what is your sense? Is this something we're going to be able to do relatively easily?
I don't think it'll be easy. It's somewhat of a reach. There's no question. The chair would probably be better at answering this, but I think it's a reach, but I voted for it. I think it's doable. And as I travel around the state and work with the people that come through the department, I think there's a broader recognition every day that we need it.
They're going to be there.
Thank you. Okay. Members, any other questions of the commissioner? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to welcome especially Mr. King from Thomson Reuters, Thomson Reuters is in my district, but also want to ask you if, have you felt that since you've released your report and since the publicity you mentioned a lot, it actually made hits around the country, have you felt that there's some competition that's going to be snapping at your heels here? Have we started something that other states are going to be rushing into?
Is that for Mr. King?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I believe that this state has created a very wide-ranging task force and seen a very good result and as a consequence, and I believe that that model itself is very interesting to the other states. So I do believe that we'll see some copying of the model. I think that the goals, I think we'll also see states stepping up and adopting the goals, and some will certainly do that once the feds come out with a goal, and then magically people will say that's the goal. It'll be a lot easier, I suppose, to just adopt what they have. But I think that many will go beyond whatever the federal goals are, and we don't necessarily have an indication of that. But my guess is it would be a little bit less than the goal that we've recommended for the state.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who this question is for. I'm just intrigued on
the very first point of your summary of the summary, that you talk about ubiquitous, affordable, high-speed broadband. How are we talking? What does affordable mean? Is that? Can you give us any sense of how that's going to be determined and what it means?
Mr. King?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, affordability is in the eyes of the beholder, of course. And it's a very difficult point to try to match. What we do know is that the private sector is very interested in providing the best possible services to the widest group of people at the lowest possible price, and competition in many areas is pretty significant for them. Whereas in other areas of our state and other states, we don't have as many choices, and the choices are cause people to be unserved or underserved. And our worry about the affordability would be that we would like to see the coverage all over the state, and we would like to see it at a level that is affordable. And I don't know what that, I don't know how to peg that number, frankly, but I think that our best opportunity is to get one and two providers into all the areas of our state, and I think the market forces will give us a competitive price at that point.
Commissioner, do you have anything you wanted to add at all? No?
No.
Okay. Then I'll pass it over to Senator Koch, then. She had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. King, and Commissioner Wilson. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Partner Solon for bringing the bill. I do think it's an aggressive bill. But it doesn't get too prescriptive in how we might reach the goal. It just sets some very far-reaching goals, and I appreciate all the work of the task force. I'm wondering, when we're kind of getting back to the affordable high-speed broadband, you touched a little bit on how competition tends to breed lower prices, and I agree. Is there anything within regulations on a state level, and we have not addressed some of our regulations lately, but is there things in regulation that are potentially prohibiting competition? Did the task force look into that at all and discuss anything on state regulation and how that affects competition and pricing?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair and Senator Koch, I probably should ask the commissioner to come back up and speak to this one, but in the realm of broadband is relatively unregulated as compared to telco, so it's quite different. And we did have significant discussions during the task force about ways that different companies that provide believe that perhaps are in the way or not in the way, and it's a slightly unequal playing field to discuss that because there was no consensus view, even among the providers themselves. So while we discussed it in an animated form, we didn't really reach a conclusion to present to you about that. So there isn't something I could tell you that I see that we could do.
Ms. Wells, you're at the table. Maybe you have some other comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Diane Wells. Broadband has been defined as an information service by the FCC, and they regulate it under Title I, so it is not regulated at the state level. So the Public Utilities Commission does not have the ability to require a telephone company to provide broadband service to an area, the speed or the rates. What we do have is a goal to encourage competition, to encourage the deployment of advanced infrastructure in Chapter 237, and the policies of the commission have been to encourage competition, so the markets have been opened up. So you see a lot of competition between the cable companies and the telephone companies, and they're not just providing telephone service, they're providing broadband service as well.
Thank you. Senator Koch, any follow-up?
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the goals in this bill. The only thing that makes me a little gives me a little pause is the part about the national, the top 15 of nations globally, and I'm not sure if that's something that we should have in state law, because isn't it really out of our control completely? I'm not quite sure why that would be one of our state goals, that a goal for our nation and in the global context.
Mr. King, you want to address that?
Yes, I would like to, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Senator Anderson, as we looked at this particular goal, we actually felt this was very important. And it's not a national goal, but rather that we wanted, you'd almost think of Minnesota as how it places against other countries. So you'd be taking a state and comparing it to other countries here in this goal. And we think it's very important because our competition is not just our neighboring states or other states in the United States, but rather we compete with other countries. And in the information business, the distance the other countries have and what they can bring to bear can have a considerable impact on our competitive levels for information jobs. So when we looked at where we wanted to rank ourselves, we had to look broadly. So the U.S. was one place we looked, and the other one just said, that's not all of our competition today as a state. We actually, as a state, compete with Asian and European countries themselves.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's a really important goal and a vision for the future. I certainly am supportive of it, but I'm not sure if I quite read that in this the meaning that you're articulating in this language. So I thought it meant that you want the United States to be in the top 15 of nations. You mean that you want Minnesota to be in the top 15 jurisdictions globally. So perhaps we should just maybe rephrase that a little. I just, because we're not a nation, and it's just a little confusing.
Well, it says, Senator Anderson does say on 1.12, then the state be in the top 15 of nations.
Nations, but we're not a nation. So how can we be in the top 15 of nations? I didn't know that's what it meant until it was explained to me, so I think there might be a little ambiguity there.
Okay. So your point is noted, and I'm sure we could probably address that to clean up that to make it read better. But you understand.
That's all I'm saying is that I didn't understand the intention, and I read it to mean something different. And so I think knowing the intention, it is an appropriate state goal. We're talking about where we want Minnesota to be positioned globally. But I think it's just a little confusing where it says nations. And Mr. Chair, can I just ask another question?
Certainly, Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I wonder if I should put the commissioner on the spot and ask him this question. But let me start by asking you, Senator Prettner-Solin, or Mr. King, correct?
Yes.
When we set goals in state law, what does that mean? And maybe that's why I'm looking at the commissioner. I mean, what does that mean to a commissioner? What does that mean to us? Does that mean that it's the job of our state agencies to meet those goals? I mean, obviously, it's not a mandate. It's not saying laying out what you have to do. But I don't know. I guess I'd like to know, what do we mean when we say this is our state's goal? What do we expect to accomplish by articulating this goal in state statute?
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, I see it is that it directs our state policy, and that is something that we refer to as we set policy regarding telecommunications and our broadband legislation that we introduce, and that we compare it to this policy that we're adopting.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and Senator Prettner-Solin, and so that would guide legislators as well as state agencies and other policymakers at the state level?
Well, it's, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, it certainly becomes a topic for discussion when legislation is brought before a committee.
And I should just mention,
similar, Senator Anderson, to discussions we have in energy about whether a type of energy is cost-effective, it reduces carbon emissions, it's renewable resources, things that we have set into state statute.
Mr. Chair, I was just thinking about that. Some of us took one of our commissioners to task for not, in my opinion, living up to our greenhouse gas reduction goals, and for taking steps that would seem to contradict that. And so we're not saying that they're going to get in trouble if they don't follow these goals, but that we think that we should all embrace them. So I think it's a good idea to set a vision out there.
But following up on what you're saying, though, Senator, is I understand what the goal that you want to be able to continue to be at the edge, the cutting edge. And so we meet these goals. Say we meet them at 2015, but now others do some things that drop us back out of the top five in 2017. I mean, does that mean we now have to put a new influx of investment to catch up, and who's responsible for doing that? I mean, how do you envision that we would continue to meet those goals year after year? Because it's 2015 and thereafter, so we got to always be in the top five. Are we going to look at the results at the end of the year, do an evaluation of where we sit, and then, you know,
Mr.
put
Chair.
The investment in? Is that what it would do?
Mr. Chair, I think that's what the recommendation from the Department of Commerce, utilizing the advisory committee, will be making recommendations annually. There is a provision for an annual report to the legislature about how we are working toward those goals and what needs to be done further to accomplish them.
And Senator Pedersen, on that point, the reports are due through the year 2015. But we're supposed to reach these goals by 2015 and thereafter. And so to have those reports, I'm just, do we want to continue that committee or that advisor, that the reports that would continue beyond that, since after we've reached that goal in 2015, and assuming we'll do that, that thereafter we have to continue to be in the top five. We need to be able to measure that we are maintaining that status. How would we do that?
Mr. Chair, I believe the same way, that Commerce will be monitoring that and will be providing that advice to the legislature. But maybe Mr. King has some other comments that he'd like to make.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, I think that the discussion about the goals and the points that Senator Anderson was making about the goals are very critical. It has a way, it's not viewed as a requirement, and the task force was not about having a requirement with anybody getting in trouble for not making it, but rather setting a target that everybody could visually focus on and see, and it's as if then all people are rowing in the same direction for the same goal, because we don't really quite know how we'll get there, but if we know where we're going, we've got a shot at it, so it gives us clarity of the final outcome. I think as to post 2015, you're indeed correct that one would think at that point we would want to continue the process, but we won't know where we are. We don't know when the last mapping will be. We may not understand the new data. There'll be a tremendous amount of private investment that happens in the next 5 years that will increase the bandwidth and hopefully cover parts of the state that aren't covered. I think we would probably find ourselves in a similar group at that time, suggesting, depending on where we get, that there needs to be a different type of group going forward. But I think rather than try to anticipate all that 5 years out, you know, we'll just say we need to get to the goals. Those goals will move Minnesota up substantially in its ranking today. And that then I think our task in 5 years will be talking about how to maintain that in what will undoubtedly be a pretty technologically advanced environment, with all states and a lot of countries working hard to be better.
Thank you, Mr. King. Maybe what we can do now at this point is bring in some of the other testifiers. And next on our list was Mr. Taylor with Health Partners. We may see part of how that vision would play out. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did Senator Vandeveer, you have a question?
If I could, real quickly, if this is okay, Mr. Chair. I don't have any difficulty understanding the top 15 of nations or top five states. I think it sets a standard kind of and a goal to look at. But my question is, What will prevent this from becoming a mandate at some juncture, being construed as one? Is there, or is that the intent? Maybe for the author, or
Senator Prentice-Solon?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Vandeveer, at this, I had never intended it for to be a mandate. I see it as a goal that sets a vision for the state, something to reach for, and we're hoping to attain it.
So it isn't intended at all to be a mandate. Just
Senator Prentice-Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, no.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask if I could make a suggested language change just to follow up on my previous comment. Before the testifiers, we could just get the language. I wanted to suggest, and maybe if council thinks this is all right, on line 16, just insert the word states or. So it says the top 15 of states or nations globally. No?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prentice-Solon.
I'm wondering if we could use the language that's in the summary. It says in the top 15 when compared to countries for global broadband access.
Okay. Is that acceptable from your point of view, Senator Anderson? Is what
I think
you're trying
okay.
to get at?
I think it's all right. It's a little slangy for, statute, but it works. I think it conveys the meaning very well, so I think that's fine.
I find that acceptable.
That's great.
You want to move an amendment on
sure,
that?
Sure, I'll move that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Senator Anderson moves to amend Senate File 2254 on line 1.16, falling after of, include the words when compared to. So it would read the top 15.
I think you delete of.
Oh, excuse me. Make a correction on that. Okay. So we'll read as such, and line 1.16, the top 15 when compared to nations globally for broadband access. Mm-hmm. Here's how we'll read. Well, one last change to that. Excuse me. On 1.16, the top 15 for broadband access when compared to nations globally.
Sounds good.
Okay. So any other comments on that change? Sure. Senator Olsen.
But I thought I heard Senator Prentice-Solon reading this line from the summary, which is different. It reads different than what you just read. Here's the summary.
What's the difference?
Well, Senator Olsen, I think we've got about the same thing. It's global broadband penetration versus broadband access. Is there a preference?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Prentice-Solon.
I think it makes a difference to modify broadband penetration by global.
We'll take
than
one.
Than it does to modify nations globally. Yeah.
So, Senator Prentice-Solon and members, we'll take the one last stab at this. So, we'll go with this language as a point 1.16, number 3, is that it will say in the top 15 when compared to countries for global broadband penetration. Okay. Which is from the summary.
It's fine.
And language is on this page, everybody, if you see it. So. I'll read it one more time. At number 3, be in the top 15 when compared to countries for global broadband penetration. Take the any comments on that? Questions? Right. And on that amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. All right. Mr. Taylor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Craig Taylor. I work at Health Partners as a Director of Information Technology. I live in River Grove Heights in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. I had the privilege of being a member of the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force in 2008 and 2009 as the Metro Healthcare Representative. I'm here to share a little information with you about just a few current and emerging uses of broadband in the state of Minnesota as they relate to healthcare from a business-to-business and business-to-consumer perspective. Many of you, I'm sure, are already aware of the e-health or telehealth opportunities being conducted across the state in such areas as teleradiology consults, telemental health visits, teledermatology consults, teleretinal imaging, telepharmacy consults and fulfillment, telemonitoring, provider and patient EMR, EHR access, and EICU, amongst others. Here are a few examples I'd like to share. In the area of business-to-business, there's a company called Virtual Radiologic who provides remote teleradiology consultation services. They're based in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, with 130-plus board-certified radiologists across the United States. Virtual Radiologic provides preliminary and final interpretation services based on a proprietary internet-based platform named VRADPAX. Virtual Radiologic deploys that secure software system in real time with no service interruptions into one of the highest volume practices in the United States to approximately 1,170 medical facilities nationwide, nearly 20% of the U.S. hospitals, with more than 2.6 million interpretations completed annually. So the benefit of having them here is that they're headquartered here. Their development, their operations, and data centers are located in Minnesota, providing well-paying service jobs in the state. Another example would be Hutchinson Area Healthcare, where remote patient monitoring services are being delivered. Hutchinson Area Healthcare joined the Avera Electronic Intensive Care Unit, EICU, network in 2008. In this example, one intensive care specialist can care for multiple patients from a remote site. In this case, it's Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The benefit would be, in addition to the patients and their families being able to stay closer to their homes, the care outcomes are improved on average with a 50% reduction in mortality compared to predicted. Another example would be there are mail order pharmacies operating in the state of Minnesota where online prescription order and fulfillment services are being performed. For example, Health Partners, Fairview Pharmacy Services, the Veterans Administration, Mayo Pharmacy, and Prime Therapeutics for specialty scripts offer online via the internet the ability to reorder and receive prescriptions delivered to your home. The benefit would be often lower cost prescriptions to consumers and the convenience of timely home delivery, along with well-paying jobs related to fulfillment and services that remain in the state. In the business-to-consumer space, in Adrian, where there's remote supervision of local order and fulfillment of prescriptions in a rural Minnesota city that's taking place. Using Script Pro telepharmacy application, a pharmacist at Sterling Drug in Worthington oversees and supports the filling and verifying of prescriptions via a video audio data link. Images that are captured at the remote Adrian pharmacy location allow the Worthington-based support pharmacist to review, approve, and document all the transactions. One-to-one patient counseling is also conducted through that video and audio link. One pharmacy tech works in Adrian full-time to provide the fulfillment service to the community. The benefit would be the increased local access, local community sourcing, supporting other local community health resources. Another example would be Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota and American Well, where an online virtual visit is conducted via web video conference. This allows consumers in a convenient home or work setting the ability to have a real-time live interaction with physicians and other medical care providers. In the pilot implementation, Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota and Fairview Health Services will offer virtual clinics at the work site that will emphasize the treatment of common illnesses and the monitoring care for patients with chronic illnesses, as well as preventative and wellness care. To facilitate the workplace use of online care, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota has created three secure online care rooms at its Eagan and Virginia, Minnesota campuses, each equipped with a computer, a webcam, biometric machines to record weight, body mass index, blood pressure, and other basic diagnostic tools. Fairview providers, including specialists from family practitioners to pediatricians and emergency medicine physicians, will be scheduled and available for consult and care. The benefit would be to improve employee health and productivity at a lower cost than the traditional clinic or retail clinic visit. In Staples, Lakewood Memorial Hospital, where remote patient monitoring is occurring via personal health devices. In Staples, Lakewood Memorial Hospital now monitors some newly released surgical patients via their home computers, which are equipped with devices that check blood pressure, temperature, pulse, and more. The benefit would be less hospital stays, less frequent in-facility visits to be checked, timelier monitoring, and improved patient outcomes. And last, the Department of Veteran Affairs, the VA Telemental Health Initiative encompasses one of the largest telemental health networks in the world with over 45,000 video conferencing and over 5,000 home telemental encounters annually. Some of those telemental health encounters are occurring with our veterans in Minnesota utilizing the internet and webcams in their home settings for the participants. The benefit would be greater and timelier access at less cost and less travel. These are just a few examples of how healthcare information and services are being used and delivered across the internet and therefore, for the most part, utilizing broadband connections in Minnesota. According to the preliminary report information delivered to us by Connect Minnesota, much, but not all, of the business and residential-oriented broadband infrastructure in place today in the state is capable of delivering on the majority of these applications, as long as the speed of delivery is in the 1 to 3 megabytes range and the task is single-threaded. That is, you are only utilizing your broadband connection for a single purpose in a sequential manner. That picture is beginning to change, particularly in the residential space, as concurrent uses take hold. As multiple opportunities grow for simultaneous use in households, so will the bandwidth requirements and so will the need for reliable and affordable broadband access across our state. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. I don't know if this would be a question for you or for Mr. King, but if we use the healthcare community fully starts to implement a lot of the things that you're talking about, I see that's a way to improve quality and reduce costs. And we're at 1 to 3 megabytes would be sufficient now, but by 2015, if you really started integrating all the potential there, we're going to swamp the system right away, aren't we? Do you guys have a sense of that, or can you address that?
Mr. Chair, I think you're correct. If you look at the typical video application and also the monitoring devices that would provide the patient information real time, you'll see more and more high-definition video present, and that being two-way as well, so that their conversations can be live and interactive. As that happens, I think it will swamp the numbers that have been put forth today. This is one of the key points that we use to help us set the minimum goals for the state that are in the recommendation of the task force. We felt that both in this example for telehealth, but also for education and some of the other applications, that two-way high-definition video, which requires quite a bit of bandwidth, is one of the things that we're going to want to be able to utilize. It has the further benefit of reducing the cost of care, but it also actually takes people off the highways. You could actually see spending more money on medical care or on education rather than school buses and gasoline. I think it's a way to take the same amount of investment and reorienting them to their real purpose rather than commuting to get there.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had seen a presentation by former Senator Kelly on a city in Sweden that was almost virtually wired, where the nurses could, from a central location, go out and check on their patients, much like you're talking about there. Are there any medical regulations that wouldn't allow that kind of stuff that you're aware of? Or,
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen. I'm not really qualified, I think, to answer that question. I know that in specific examples, there are state regulations that have to be met in order for remote access, remote activities to take place, but I'm not really qualified to
Senator Pretnisolen.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair. Senator Alcyne, I do sit on the policy and on the finance committees of Health and Human Service, and we do from time to time take up policies that allow for telecommuting for physicians and their patients, and that has happened for psychiatrists, especially for pediatric psychiatrists, because there is such a need in greater Minnesota, and it helps to bring access to other parts of the state. So we have been loosening up a number of those things, and it may require changes in state legislation to do that.
Thanks. Senator Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Taylor, thanks for your presentation. And I do think that some of this internet monitoring will increase quality, as well as it's certainly more convenient for the patient. It's nice, you know, something you can check in from home. But is there any, and I also think we can cut down some costs. Do you have any dollar amounts, or is there any way to quantify some of the savings that some of these projects that you mentioned have realized through the internet monitoring or the outsourcing the radiology, something like that?
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch. I don't actually have the measurement amounts with me today, but there are actually in some of these projects there is a measurement aspect to them as it relates to cost and quality, mm-hmm. and I could probably try to work to get that information for you.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Taylor. Appreciate it. Our next testifier would be Ms. Johnson from Frontier Communications. Welcome, and obviously please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Joanne Johnson. I'm the Regional Manager of Governmental Relations for Frontier Communications here in the state of Minnesota. And I'm also a proud and a grateful member of the Broadband Task Force. Proud to have been part of what I think is very good work, and grateful that I got named to this particular group. Serving on the task force was an extremely positive experience for all of us. And the importance of striving for consensus that's been mentioned earlier was incredibly important to the outcome of the project. And while it looked absolutely impossible at the beginning, it was the biggest contributor to the success at the end. It was remarkably effective in bringing 23 diverse professionals, both users and providers of broadband services, together to produce a report that we could all sign. And those signatures are significant. What it should indicate to you is that during the course of our study and our work, we learned just as much from each other as we did from the subject matter experts that were brought before us. So basically what we did is we came to the conclusion that the number itself doesn't really matter. We gave you a number because you asked for a number. What matters for the state of Minnesota is ubiquity, accessibility, affordability, and upping the penetration rate of the use of broadband in our state for a variety of reasons. We'd like very much to keep some of this momentum going, and we feel that we have very good rationale for asking you to provide for this. There's work to be done in many, many areas, one being, of course, what Mr. Taylor has just described to you, which is in healthcare, which we think there is credible potential for cost savings to our healthcare system, as well as an increase in the services that we can deliver on a better, faster, and more efficient basis to people, particularly our aging population, and particularly in rural Minnesota. We'd also like to uncover any barriers if they exist, and we think that probably they do, and they surface periodically, but attention has to be paid. So we catch those things, fix those barriers, and streamline the system so that we can do a better job of outreach to our citizens so they're more aware of the tools that already exist and the technology that's already available so that we can make their lives easier. Second, the expansion of the educational system and the use of broadband in the state of Minnesota beyond the excellence that's shown by our current K-12 and higher ed systems can be a real opportunity for a true community outreach effort that will allow cradle-to-grave education for all Minnesotans going forward, which is a goal that we often talk about, but we never quite give anything concrete to support that notion, and here's an opportunity to do that. We can create support mechanisms, perhaps even giving an opportunity for folks who have trouble procuring a computer or perhaps a broadband connection. Public computing centers, the public libraries are doing a fantastic job of doing that so that people can apply what they learn. They can apply for jobs online and perhaps move forward in their life and make things better for their family. Third, there are projects like the public libraries and other public computing centers that we can build upon for the economic health of the state of Minnesota. Workforce centers, small business technology training, entrepreneurship, encouragement, all of these things can be done utilizing broadband and doing it online. What I would like to see is I'd like to see a change from that headline that we read in November that came out of the Boston, Miami, New York, and Washington papers that said Minnesota needs significant internet upgrades. Next year, I'd like that headline to be on all those papers, too, but I'd like to see it read, Minnesota, extremely connected and open for business. I think that would be a whole lot better for us. And there's work that we left undone, and this was touched on earlier. First and foremost, we only scratched the surface of the security issues. And as more and more of our daily lives becomes terribly immersed with broadband, both professionally and privately in the things that we do, any break to the system, any problem, any choke point, any break in a fiber line is incredible hardship for our citizens. And so we need to take a serious look. We need to be able to take a intense scrutinizing look at the surety of the system itself, the network, identify choke points and vulnerabilities that could be fixed and devise ways to do that. At the same time, we are collecting an exponentially larger amount of data every day, and we need to protect that data and the privacy of our citizens. And all of this needs standards, it needs resources, and it needs the type of talent that exists in this state, but we haven't been able to tap yet to study it in a deeper level than we were able to go. And then we had regarding the incentives and the financial aspect of building out a stronger broadband system. We did compile an interesting list of what other states are doing in this arena, and we did delve into the beginnings of devising what the costs are of deploying a larger network, upgrading the services, increasing the speeds, but we didn't go far enough to be able to come to you with any recommendations at all. And we need to do that. And we realize that there is absolutely no general funding to ask for. We get that part. But what we do think is that it is an opportunity for us to begin to think creatively and out of the box. We could at least assess the myriad of ideas that are out there for us, tax incentives, universal service programs. Perhaps we fund something with surcharges. Who gets surcharged? All of that deserves some further attention. And not only for now, when we're in hard times and we have to maybe think outside the box a little bit more, but more importantly for the future, which we hope will perhaps be a more pleasant financial outlook for the state of Minnesota. The broadband plan that Rick mentioned is going to be released next month, and we need to have some sort of attention, some sort of responsibility, some sort of intent to react to that as quickly as we can. There may be ways to leverage that national plan for the betterment of Minnesota. We don't know, but somebody has to pay attention. So the report we gave you is good. It's actually better than good. And that's really due in large part to the makeup of the task force that you put together. It's also due to the processes that we use that were very, very effective. And it is due in no small part to the energetic support and the incredible generous contributions from the Department of Commerce and from Thomson Reuters. Without them, you would not have seen quite the glossy product that you got. And so we really thank them. So we ask you to please endorse the work that we did, adopt our goals, and if possible, let some good people continue the good work that we started. And thank you. That concludes my testimony, but any of us who have spoken before would be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Ms. Johnson. I guess one thing I did want to ask, we open it up here, is, and I guess we do have one other testifier, too, on the barriers. And I know we want definitely want to see the cost, and in order to keep the cost down, we want to keep competition high. We're going to have to use, you know, those in the private sector that now have, you know, the capability with cable and others, maybe the telecoms that can enter into that market. But there are some challenges, I think, I've heard of that to that. And I'm wondering if the model we now use for franchising is going to be a barrier for us to go forward, or is, you know, that may need some modifications, or do you think it works just fine?
Mr. Chair, Senators, I do think that the time is ripe for serious discussion on how we can better streamline regulatory rules and both the statute for the cable industry and for the telephone industry. Everything has blended together, and we are in such an age of offering the same product just over a different wire that I think it is time for a serious look at revamping and modernizing all of that statute, both for both sides of that particular issue, the cable and the telephone industries, because we have to recognize that there's also a great number of third players that are coming in with broadband. And when you get right down to it, going forward into the future, it's the broadband connection that's going to matter. That's what's going to deliver most of the services you're going to want to use. So I do believe the time is right for modernization.
Thank you very much. Questions from members? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We have one final testifier today. I wanted to bring forward John Griffin. And still here? Yes. Mr. Griffin, welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself for the record, if you wouldn't mind, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to members of the committee for letting me speak this evening. Well, my name is John Griffin, and I'm the chairman of Fiber First Minnesota, which is a five-year-old advocacy group that is focused on accelerating the deployment of fiber optic infrastructure throughout Minnesota and directly to all homes in Minnesota. Really, that focus is to deliver upon a goal of making Minnesota more competitive both today and in the future. And fiber to the home, we think, as bandwidth requirements continue to evolve and grow, is a technology that really makes us competitive now and for 50 years into the future. My background is in the communications industry, where I have worked for various service providers and worked for companies that provide equipment to these service providers as they build their networks. I continue to work on a daily basis with Minnesota and Midwestern-based service providers, municipalities, and cable commissions on broadband and how they can enhance their competitive position. I want to compliment the chairman, Mr. King, and the task force for the hard work all of them have done in developing these broadband goals and in delivering this report today. It will only increase the competitiveness of Minnesota, both in the U.S. and the world, as we strive for this ranking goal, moving from 24th to 5th in the United States and above the 15 countries in the world. I obviously support this bill, and I just want to make sure that approval of this bill will not make the hard work of the task force languish on all of our bookshelves. And it's something that we can use as a roadmap to move forward both today and in the future. I think the advisory group is a point of presence where we can monitor and measure progress and report back to the legislature, this committee, and all citizens in Minnesota as to progress on that goal and adjust as we move forward in the next 5 years. My experience is that when you establish a goal, you have to have a vision, of course, in the future. But putting a flashlight on that and putting that in front of everybody to measure that progress increases the probability that we'll actually meet it. So because the evening is getting late, that's the end of my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Appreciate that. I do agree we want to make sure we keep the spotlight on it, and I'm sure we will. That's one of the things that I recognized from the report when it was released that, you know, we have a broad base of stakeholders that have all come together and said this is going to work, and that's generally the hardest part of getting these things to move forward is having consensus on from those, you know, broad range of stakeholders.
So I agree, Mr. Chairman.
I go forward. Any questions from members of Mr. Griffin? Thank you, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you.
Right. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Those of you who were at the Legislative Policy Conference at the Humphrey Institute yesterday learned that almost 80% of our jobs are in the service sector. We then heard from PK Agarwal, who is the Chief Information Technology Officer for the state of California. And he said that IT is the infrastructure for building high-tech jobs. And he went on to quote former Governor Leavitt, Mike Leavitt of Utah, who said, "Those individuals and societies who resist this reality will fail. Those which accept it will survive, and those which embrace it will flourish." So I'm hoping that you will embrace this for the state of Minnesota. And as our last speaker went on to tell us that we need to set high goals for ourselves to strive toward in order to excel and to become a star in our nation where we can be successful. So with that, I would ask that you would support Senate File 2254 and that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor.
Senator Prettner-Solon moves Senate File 2254 as amended and be re-referred to the floor from here. Any comments or questions? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, just about the dates through the 15th, if this is going to the floor, there's no other opportunity to really amend this, correct? The date about the report on the goals at 1.20, that they be made through 2015. I think we've heard good discussion that should be ongoing, and would this be the right place to strike that language or leave it in there?
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, I certainly wouldn't want to strike it. I'd want it to make sure that it would at least be through 2015.
Senator Prettner-Solon, Council is advising us that if we do strike that, because it says must be annually, and then it would go on indefinitely at this point. So,
Mr. Chair, yes, and at least that gives us an opportunity to look at it at that time, or any time before that, to determine if we would need further reports.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Once again, Senator Prettner-Solon moves Senate File 2254 as amended. It will be re-referred to the floor from here. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That concludes our business this afternoon. This meeting is adjourned.
I can't.